Hi, everyone, and welcome to Ask the Horse Live. I'm your host, Haley Peffer, Digital Managing Editor at thehorse.com. Equine skin problems can stem from a wide range of causes, including parasites, bacterial or fungal infections, allergies, and prolonged exposure to moisture or irritants. Successfully managing horses with skin problems relies on working with your veterinarian to identify the underlying issue and appropriately treat it. Because many dermatologic conditions can look similar in the early stages, it's important to have the veterinarian evaluate your horse promptly to help prevent complications and improve outcomes. This event is sponsored by Creative Science. To answer your questions, we're joined by expert panelists Dr. Julia Miller from Animal Dermatology Group and Dr. Carly Turner Garcia from Black Type Equine. Welcome to both of you.
Hi. Thank you. So happy to be here.
Dr. Miller, can you start us off by telling us a little bit about your background?
Yeah, absolutely. So I have been a horse girl, you know, crazy horse girl my whole life. Started riding when I was 4. When I went to vet school, I originally wanted to be an equine podiatrist. I actually went to farrier school before vet school. And then I did my rotating large animal internship at the University of Georgia, where I actually met Dr. Turner Garcia. It's a small world. After I finished my internship, though, I went into general practice. And at the time, mixed animal practice was kind of what was available. This is about 2013. And I ended up, unfortunately or fortunately, really liking my small animal cases as well and moving a lot more towards dermatology. So I ended up going back to Cornell for my dermatology residency after spending about 4 years in mixed animal practice. And then after my residency, stuck around as faculty for a few years at Cornell, and now I am practicing in beautiful Louisville, Kentucky, Louisville and Lexington, where I'm happy to see dogs, cats, or horses. And I still have a horse. I've got a 24-year-old Haflinger mare named Callie, who is still a Spitfire, and I love her very much. So very excited to be talking about all things horse skin today.
Thank you. And Dr. Turner Garcia, can you tell us a little bit about your background?
Sure, I would love to. Thank you for having me on. So I graduated from the University of Georgia in 2013, which is also how I had the pleasure of meeting Dr. Miller. So fun to be reunited here on this podcast. I then spent the next, well, however many years it's been, 13 in private practice in Kentucky. I did a residency in reproduction at Texas A&M University and board certified in that. And I chose that because I wanted to be able to take it back and do private practice and still work on other cases like derm cases and things like that. And so then I worked in Texas for a few years and have since been working in Oklahoma and now own my own practice, Black Type Equine here. So I do see all sorts of different things that come across my way, emergencies, regular cases, reproduction, all things horses. Even though I didn't start out as necessarily a horse girl like Dr. Miller did, I didn't get into horses until I was an undergraduate, but I certainly found my passion for them then and knew that's exactly what I wanted to do for the rest of my life. And here I still am. So I'm really looking forward to talking about some of my practical approaches and learning some cool facts from Dr. Miller as well.
Thank you. Before we begin answering questions, I want to remind everyone of our Ask the Horse Live format. We're starting with questions that were submitted during registration. If you're listening live and would like to submit a question, please do so via the chat window. We'll do our best to get to as many of your questions as possible. If you're listening to the podcast recording of this event and would like to join us live in the future, please visit thehorse.com/askthehorselive to register for notifications. And with that, we're going to jump in. So Dr. Miller, our first question is for you. It's from Nancy in Texas, who wants to know if you can explain what sweet itch is.
Yeah, thank you for a great question, Nancy. So sweet itch is one of the sort of colloquial terms we have for insect bite hypersensitivity or culicoides hypersensitivity. Some people will also call it Queensland itch or summer eczema. That's another name you might hear for it. And effectively what that means is that you have a horse that is allergic to the saliva from those little noceums, those little gnats that are flying around their head. Normally we see them sort of dusk and dawn. That's when they feed. And your horse actually has an allergy to that saliva. So they develop a pretty severe hypersensitivity reaction that can be super itchy. Classically, it happens kind of in between their jaw or on their belly, mane and tail. Those are some classic spots for it.
Dr. Turner Garcia, Erin in British Columbia asked why her horse only has flaky skin around the mane and tail and on her legs.
Well, that's a question I often ask myself about my own horses, or used to, and I see that quite a bit in all ages, young horses, yearlings, older horses, and that sort of deal. And it's kind of like humans, you know, humans get dandruff and flaking around the scalp generally, have, you know, irritation around hands, things like that. The oil glands tend to be more concentrated there around mane and tail. And so they're more likely to get a seborrheic dermatitis in that area. And if you notice, when a horse sweats, they also kind of sweat around those areas under the mane, things like that. And that can also cause them to be more prone to flaking in those areas. The limbs are also the ones that are getting wet. If you're in pasture, passing through the dew, walking through mud, other things like that, and that can cause kind of a contact dermatitis as well. However, the things to kind of keep in mind about flaking is that usually it's a secondary problem, not a primary problem. And it could be something as simple as, you know, seasonal changes, right? It gets hot, it gets dry, skin dries out more, you know, it gets really wet. You know, horses are really good at just being upset about all of the different climates. Could be ectoparasites, but it's important to remember that flaking can be an indicator of a more serious underlying condition like nutritional imbalances, or conditions with the immune system or organ systems like the liver or GI. So it's when you're looking at, you know, why does my horse flake there? It could be simple. It could be sweating, could be, you know, oil production, but it also could be something else. So it's still, even when it seems like, oh, just dandruff, still an important thing to maybe consult your veterinarian about and just make sure that you're have a balanced look at your horse as far as like their organ systems, their immune systems, and their nutrition and things like that. It can also be caused by overbathing, which I know we love to bathe our horses. They look beautiful, they look shiny. And so that's another thing to remember, that when you overbathe, it can strip their natural oils and skin flora, and it can also predispose them to flaking in those areas.
Dr. Miller, Alexandra asked what the best treatment is for acute hives.
Oh man, Alexandra, I love when you use words like best. But I will tell you the very best thing for hives is a good old steroid. And I know that, you know, steroids, you know, they make us fear a little bit in our horses. We worry about laminitis and founder. And I think that there are certain horses that are certainly in a higher risk group for that. You know, let me think about my pony, my old pony growing up who just had Cushing's for days and days. Of course, we were worried about her feet, so we were very careful with steroids. But the truth of the matter is most healthy horses can really tolerate steroids pretty well, especially if we're talking about short term. And with hives that are a first time offender, you know, your horse hasn't had hives before, we're not talking about keeping that horse on medications for months and months. It's usually a treat it for a few days, and then you can kind of see, do the hives recur when we reduce the treatment and when we stop it. And if you do have a horse with hives, I always go with this mantra. It's food, bug, drug, and then if it's none of those things, it can be allergies. So what does that mean? If you get a horse that's never had hives before, the very first thing I want you to do is think about any new changes in diet. And I bet you $25, there's going to be a hay change. You'll say, oh, we just opened up the second cutting today. We had some hay from a new distributor. It was just a new bale. And we don't know what it is in the hay that can trigger it, but hay is absolutely one of the big time offenders when it comes to new hives in horses. Then I think about bugs, and bugs are great at causing hives in horses. However, most of the time, bugs are going to cause a hive that kind of comes up quickly and goes away quickly. So if you have hives all over your horse's body, unless they got themselves into a poor bee's nest, which I really hope didn't happen, you know, it's unlikely that bugs have done tons of different hives on your horse. And I want to throw drug out there. So one of the other big reasons horses can get hives is from a drug reaction. But I want to remind you guys that drugs don't have to mean, you know, antibiotics, steroids, things like that. Drugs can actually be the supplement that the horse is on. I like to tell a story of a young horse that had persistent hives, and he was allergic to the flax supplement they were giving him. And he had been treated with steroids and all these different medications. And all we had to do was stop giving him the flax supplement and his hives 100% resolved. So when we say drug, it could be your horse got vaccinated, your horse is on an antibiotic, something like that. But it can also just be a supplement that they're on that you're giving them, you know, for vitamin E or for flax or something of that nature. So steroids are the best way to get rid of those hives. But I always recommend that you become a little detective, put that cap on and try to figure out what could be causing the hives. Did anything change in that horse's environment? Dr. Turner Garcia mentioned shampoos, for example. Love them. Bathing horses is great. But I've absolutely seen contact reactions from certain shampoos, too, that can cause hives. So become a little detective, figure out what's going on, and don't fear to treat that horse with steroids for a couple of days if you need to.
Dr. Turner Garcia, Patricia in Colorado wants to know how she can identify a sarcoma on her horse.
Great question, Patricia. So sarcoma is kind of a broad encompassing term for cancers that can affect the bone and soft tissue of the horses. So my guess is that she's wanting to know more about our most common type of spindle cell tumor or sarcoma that is going to be sarcoids or sarcoidosis. And sarcoidosis is usually diagnosed on clinical features and the fact that there's multiple lesions, and we can talk about that. But because there are different types, 5-6 different types of sarcoids, and handling them sometimes is easy, but most of the time it can be pretty difficult and they really like to recur, I do think it's really important to involve your veterinarian in the decision of diagnosing to make sure that you are treating appropriately, and then also a plan for treatment going forwards on these. So in general, if you're looking and you say, oh my gosh, my horse has this lesion, is it a sarcoid? What is it? Is it just skin fungus? You know, my first recommendation is to work with your veterinarian. And when you guys are working together, you know, like I said, sarcoids, they can present different ways, but they're usually on the face, the neck, the extremities. You can find them on the trunk area. They can pretty much show up anywhere. And it's important to remember that they can turn bad kind of fast. They can grow. Usually they're not super malevolent or malignant, metastatic, but in rare cases they can be. The gold standard for diagnosing sarcoidosis or sarcoma or what type of spindle cell tumor you're dealing with in the horse is going to be a histopathology, usually based from a biopsy. However, a lot of people don't, and a lot of veterinarians don't like to do this because, as you know, trauma, injury, biopsy, those things can kind of anger a sarcoid and cause it to progress more rapidly than it was. So it's important when you're going to diagnose these and treat these to get a game plan. You know, is it a smaller nodular one that you, looks like you can surgically excise and then, you know, take the whole thing and then biopsy it and see if you're going to need follow-up treatment? If it comes back, then you can have a plan for that. A lot of people will go ahead and start treating and then diagnose by response to treatment. If it doesn't respond, then you start looking for something else. So the other thing to remember is that it kind of does have a breed predilection. So it does like quarter horses, Arabians, Appaloosas. So if you have one of those breeds, it would be more likely for it to be a sarcoid. But for the most part, it also kind of depends on, you know, you can diagnose it. You can kind of say, oh, this is what it is. But it depends on your end goals as well. And for what you're diagnosing it. Is it because it's causing the horse to be uncomfortable? Is it because it's causing a cosmetic lesion on your show horse? And so I'm just going to circle back, and I've probably beat it to death, but I just think it's really important to work with your veterinarian to come up with the best diagnosis plan and the best treatment plan going forward, both for you and the horse, and to meet the goal of your end goal. Are you looking for a perfect cosmetic repair? Are you looking for comfort? Are you looking to stop progression? That sort of thing.
Jump in too. I think that Dr. Turner Garcia had excellent points about sarcoids in horses. They're kind of near and dear to my heart as a dermy, and I've been to some really interesting new talks on them. And they're, you know, one big thing is we're all afraid of them, and reasonably so, because they can become angry. You know, you can remove a sarcoid and it becomes worse than before you removed it. So it is super important to have a plan. They're not your normal tumor. They have a much more aggressive, potentially much more aggressive behavior. But there's some really neat things you can do adjunctively. One of those being injecting chemotherapy into the mass removal site, which greatly improves prognosis and is actually recommended as gold standard for any sarcoid that's removed now. It's not that expensive. It's easy to do. Most general practitioners are very capable of it. So there's some really nice treatments out there that we can do if we want to remove these. But I thoroughly second what Dr. Turner Garcia said. If you are going to biopsy or remove something you think is a sarcoid, you've got to have a plan because, you know, if it goes worse, what are you going to do? In fact, I don't actually recommend sarcoids are ever removed without chemotherapy because for me, I want adjunctive treatment. I don't just want removal. I want a secondary treatment option in there as well. And that's kind of what all the sarcoid experts of the world are also agreeing on. I also want to make a quick distinction. There is a skin condition called sarcoidosis. And I honestly, I love you guys out there. I hope your horse never has that disease. That is a different one than regular sarcoids. And it kind of stinks. It's like an autoimmune disease that causes generalized scaling and weird stuff. So if your vet does a biopsy on funky skin disease on your horse and you get sarcoidosis, have them give me a call. We'll talk about what to do because that's a funky one. But yeah, I think all of that advice on sarcoids is really solid advice. Have a plan, talk with your vet, you know, make sure that you're on board for all the different treatments.
Dr. Miller, we have our first question from our live audience. It's from Lori, and she would like to know if itchiness or skin problems are more common in horses with PPID or EMS.
Yeah, Lori, that's a great question. Thank you for asking something live. I appreciate it. So not necessarily as much for your Cushing's horses, your PPID horses. There are certain skin things that they are more prone to. With chronic Cushing's, they can get thin skin. They're certainly more prone to wounds and damage like that. I have seen some of those horses also get kind of patchy, funky hair loss because those chronic steroids that they're producing can change their normal coat. And, you know, I'll also throw this in there. I have seen some that are more prone to recurrent staph and or potentially fungal issues. Although pro tip, everybody, 9 times out of 10, it is bacteria. It is not fungus in horses. We love to give horses ringworm and they don't have it most of the time. It's almost always staph. So remember to treat them more like a bacterial horse, more so than a fungal horse most of the time. But absolutely, our Cushing's type of horses, because their immune system is a little bit suppressed from having that disease, they are more prone to those secondary infections, staph, fungus, things like that. Usually very easily fixed with those horses. Just have them on a schedule with a good medicated bath, something that has chlorhexidine, miconazole, ketoconazole. There's some lovely medicated shampoos out there that if I had a horse with Cushing's, I would probably just have them on a routine medicated bath schedule so that I could try to prevent any potential secondary infections. And, you know, EMS horses, other than being adorable for how chubby they are, skin-wise, in general, they tend to do pretty well. We don't see as many secondary skin issues with them. Like I said, unless maybe you have like saddle rub because they're little chubby chunks and we love them so. But not as many things with your EMS horses.
And Dr. Miller, Claire in Pennsylvania wants to know how to stop her horse from rubbing her mane and tail raw during the summer.
Oh man, Claire, if you figure it out, you tell me. No, there are a couple things. So when you have a horse that is rubbing their mane and tail to bits and pieces, we all, as in derm and in all of vet med, we go back to our differential diagnoses. We think about what are the potential causes, and then we try to rule each one out as much as we can. So when I see a horse that's rubbing their mane or their tail, I think of what could do it. And number one is absolutely an allergy, to be honest with you. And we talked a little bit about sweet itch or culicoides hypersensitivity in that very first question. That is a big cause for mane and tail itching. And usually that is the summer months. Now, if you practice somewhere where it's warm year round, you know, Florida, Texas, those little culicoides gnats don't really have much of a season. Here in Kentucky, it freezes so in the wintertime, and they're not very strong flies, so they will die. So we have a nice season for our culicoides up here. But if you're aware it's warm year-round, you're going to have those little buggers year-round. But usually, if we're seeing the mane and tail scratching, I'm thinking about, could they have insect bite hypersensitivity or culicoides hypersensitivity? Could they also have environmental allergies? That's another really big cause of mane and tail rubbing. And they will get secondary infections. You got to watch out for those. Now, another big thing, not so much mane, but big time for tail. When we think about tail rubbing in horses, everybody wants to blame pinworms. It's like their favorite thing to do. Oxyuris equi, pinworms, all the fun. I'm going to be honest with you guys. It is almost never pinworms. Reason being, they are so easy to kill with ivermectin. A pinworm looks at ivermectin and drops dead. So, and most of us have our horses on a pretty routine deworming schedule. That being said, I think a lot of people are doing a wonderful job of very targeted deworming using fecal egg counts and things of that nature, which is excellent. You know, follow your vet's advice. I think that's really, really good stewardship there. So I do wonder if we might see a small resurgence of pinworm if horses are being dewormed a little bit less. But everybody likes to say, oh, my horse is rubbing his tail. He needs to be dewormed. And that's actually not always the case. More often it's allergies, whether it's regular environmental allergies or potentially that insect bite hypersensitivity. And then I'll throw this out there. If you have a heavily feathered horse, a Gypsy Vanner, a draft horse, a draft cross, there is a mite called Choreoptes, and that mite can travel up those little back legs and make its way to the tail. And that can be why your horse is also rubbing its tail. So how do you treat the tail rubbing? You got to try to kind of get down to the root cause of what is there. Why is it happening? And then that should help you get your horse to stop rubbing.
Dr. Turner Garcia, Teresa in Georgia wants to know how to treat scratches. And then also we have Carrie in our live audience who would like to know specifically how you treat those types of skin problems when it's in a hot or humid climate.
Oh, well, you were right up my alley. from Georgia, Texas, Oklahoma, we see scratches a lot. And so for those of you who are maybe lucky and in drier, more northern regions, scratches is what we call pastern dermatitis or folliculitis. It's also called mud fever or dew poisoning. And it's usually bacterial, can have some mixed fungal in there, but I agree with Dr. Biller, like fungal, as much as we love to blame everything on fungus, it's not maybe quite as common as we think. And so, and I've actually seen horses, I've had cases come in where they're physically lame from how uncomfortable they are from the scratches. And the lesions may not even look visually that bad, but you clean it up and the horse is sound again. And you know, they can get some limb edema, some cellulitis, a whole bunch of other secondary problems from scratches if we let them go and they're not treated. So, you know, there's kind of a whole gamut of things you can do, and I'm just going to list them all. And not every case of scratches might need every single one of these things, but kind of my go-to basket is if they have a lot of feathers and they have a lot of hair down there, usually I know, gasp, I will usually try to clip it away as long as I can do it without, you know, burning or causing them to bleed, clip all the scabs off. You want to kind of go light. You don't want to anger the area too much. It's already angry enough. And then usually I recommend a gentle wash with an antiseptic and antifungal shampoo. So like we already, like Dr. Miller already talked about, something that has chlorhexidine, miconazole, ketoconazole. It can even have something to help calm down. Oatmeal, some of them have corticosteroids in them as well to try to get that area a little bit more comfortable. Usually I only do that. If it's really severe, I might do it twice a day for the first few days. But usually I just do that once a day. I don't want to keep it wet, because part of the problem and part of the reason they get that is because they are in hot, moist areas. And so constantly keeping that area wet, even if it's with medicated shampoos and everything, isn't letting it dry out as it should. And so I usually, when I shampoo them, I let it sit for a little while, 10 to 15 minutes, you know, go grab a snack, something, leave the horse tied in the wash rack. I come back out, rinse them off, and then I do my best. I use a towel. I try to blot as much water off as possible, and I try to leave the horse to dry. I've even been known in some cases where people didn't want to clip the feathers to pull out a blow dryer or a fan, you know, whatever we need to do to get the job done here. And so you want to continue to kind of wash the area. Usually I do that anywhere from 5 to 10 days, depending on the severity, and then I back it down to a few times a week. Until they kind of look like they're healing. The second thing or third thing I like to do after that is apply a topical that has an antibacterial, antifungal, and steroids to the area. I try to put something on there that's gonna stay, right? I don't try to spray it on there where it just falls off or something like that. And I do that once a day as well, because again, I want the area to dry out. Sometimes it can be severe enough that the horse might need some systemic treatment with some anti-inflammatories, and more rarely for me, if you can get good topical and good management, I don't really use systemic antibiotics unless there's indication of like a cellulitis that's working itself up the leg and we're not winning. And at that point, I might put them on systemic antibiotics as well. And then the other important thing is if you have the ability, keep this horse in a clean, dry area, right? Because if you do all this work and you toss them back out in the mud, you've just slaved for nothing, and you're going to be right back to square one where you started. Pardon me. And so there's different beddings that carry more moisture. So in general, you're going to be looking for like shavings that are larger, flakier, not so small, sawdusty, that are going to allow the horse to dry out. So good management, good grooming practices, and staying on top of keeping them clean. And you can kind of gently massage. The scabs will start to come off with the cleaning, and you can do that, but you don't want to get in there, ladies, with your acrylic nails on there and try to pick all that stuff off at one time, because it can cause a little bit of a more angrier reaction to do that quickly. So those are generally the things that I like to do for scratches, and we do see those pretty commonly, especially through the rainy summer months here.
That is such good advice. I second every single thing you said. And I feel the need to jump in because scratches is one of the biggest things that I get consulted on, to be honest with you guys. And it really is. I mean, again, that is incredibly solid advice. One of the other things we think about, there are some potential other causes. And I'll throw this out there for you guys. If you have a horse whose scratches are like scratches 2.0, like super severe, really bad, they've got these deep, oozy things, these crusts that will never go away. Horses can also get what's called vasculitis in their legs. And what that is it's inflammation of the blood vessels. And it's a funky thing that horses like to get in their distal limbs. And that needs to be treated with different medications. So if you are, you know, if you got a horse that usually has run-of-the-mill scratches and, you know, clears up most years, but this year you're like, holy moly, this is wild. Make sure you have your veterinarian out so they can take a look at that. Take some good pictures. Sometimes those horses even need biopsies of their leg to get a definitive diagnosis, but that's another condition we can think about and just kind of pivot and use some other treatments for.
I absolutely agree. Vasculitis is like a danger word for me. So I'm glad you brought it up because I actually hate it. And usually that's a time that I'll be like, oh, hello, dermatologist. Would you assist with this? So thanks for jumping in there.
No, yeah, it's not fun. I'm with you.
Dr. Miller, we have another question from our live audience. Magdalene says her mare suffers from Eastern leukocyclastic vasculitis. Are there any products that she can use to help this? She tries to prevent it as much as possible, but in the summer, especially with high UV risks, it can get chronic even with wraps.
Yeah, listen, it's like you read our minds. So Pastern leukocytoclastic vasculitis, or PLV, in Durham, we love to have big words and then break them down into fun little acronyms. But PLV is definitely something that can cause the severe issues with the distal legs of horses that, like I said, scratches 2.0. And it is UV triggered, absolutely. There are a couple little hints I have for you. Number one, there is a medication called pentoxifilin. It is my most favorite medication for treating PLV because it helps a lot with getting the red blood cells where they need to get so that your horse can heal when they have vasculitis. So speak to your family veterinarian about considering treatment with that. I will warn you, that's not a treat for a week. That's like a treat for several months to get that leg healed up. But it really does work quite well for this condition. Another big thing that you bring up, which is accurate, is sun protection. And there's a couple of really nice options for that. Think about how you're stabling your horse. That can be beneficial. And I hate to say it, but outside during the day and in the sunny weather is going to allow for that PLV to get triggered a little bit more. So I usually have those horses put outside at night. That can be beneficial. Keep them inside during the day, which, you know, is nice for the flies anyway. And then there also is, there are a number of different protective socks out there that are actually, some of them are impregnated with silver. And if you Google that, you will find those different options. And I've used some of those in my PLV horses incredibly successfully because they do two things. Well, they do three things. One, they do have some UV protection, which I love. Second thing is they actually protect the skin itself from little micro traumas, you know, from straw bedding or the grass that's out there. And the third thing is they are impregnated with the silver, and silver has some healing properties as well as antimicrobial properties. And those PLV horses are very prone to secondary infections as well. So I really like the socks. I use them with some regularity, but also make sure that you are treating your horse and checking your horse for any secondary infections too. There's some really nice topical creams and ointments out there that can be used to kind of help with any secondary issues. But UV protection, selective stabling, physical protection with the socks, and then that pentoxyphylline medication with the help of your veterinarian can be very beneficial for your PLV horses.
I'm going to throw a second in there on the silver socks. Also, I love those. Not for, other things, wound healing, things like that. But yeah, I never thought about it for that. But yeah, those are great.
They're cool. They're very cool. Yeah.
Dr. Turner Garcia, Judy in Nebraska asks how to treat summer sores in horses.
Well, Judy is speaking my language. this is something that as a reproductive veterinarian, I see probably maybe a little bit more commonly as it likes to go to mucous membranes, which often equivalates to the penis of the stallion. So summer sores, for those of you who maybe are luckier to be in an area that doesn't have them as much, the doctor word is cutaneous habermeniasis. And how horses get them is there's three types of habernema, stomach worms that live in the stomach of the horse, and they lay eggs, and the larvae are passed in through the feces. Flies come, pick up the larvae, land on places like the horse's mouth, the legs, where the horses are going to re-ingest these, and that's how the life cycle goes. However, how do they get on the outside of the body? Well, horses, the flies are obviously attracted to wet, moist, maybe stinky areas, like the mucous membranes, the genitalia. If your horse has a break in the skin, a little wound, some irritation, flies cluster those places, and that's how you get the summer sores on the skin or the mucous membranes, like cutaneous habernema. Luckily, while they can be kind of a pain to treat, they usually are pretty treatable. Although I do recommend you kind of jump on it and not just, you know, let it go and hope that it goes away by yourself. So most of the summer sores you're going to see are going to be start out as like an in general area of inflammation, but then it's going to get ulcerative, and then they're going to get these tiny little rice sized yellow granules. We like to call them sulfur granules. And obviously this is usually seasonal. So when your flies come out, this is when you start to see your summer sores, hence, you know, summer sores, accurate name there. And treatment can be fairly straightforward on some of these cases, but it can also be difficult. I've had horses that we've had to treat for months to get this to resolve. So the first thing you want to do is effectively deworm your horse, right? So if you're going to treat the outside, but the horse is still going to be full of habernema on the inside, you're just looking for it to recur and happen again, which unfortunately that is something. It seems like there might be some sort of genetic predisposition. And so this does have a tendency to recur in horses from year to year, unfortunately. It's the gift that keeps on giving, but not the fun kind. So habernema is fairly susceptible to ivermectin still, or at least in the cases that I've treated. And so my first recommendation is that if the horse hasn't been dewormed very recently, that we go ahead and dose them with ivermectin. If for some reason it's a non-healing lesion, we've been treating it, we might try a different dewormer in the following weeks. But usually I start with ivermectin. And the next thing I do is I clean the wound up really well. If it's, you know, getting granuloma or granulomatous tissue, proud flesh, we try to debride it a little bit. And then we start with the topical treatments. So that's usually going to include steroids and an antibacterial, because they can get pretty nasty. So a secondary bacterial lesion is pretty common, bacterial infection. And then I like to mix some ivermectin in there. So I kind of make my little summer sore soup paste and mix those kind of three things together and then put them on topically. If I can cover the area, I will try to do that. Oftentimes it can be a little bit difficult to cover the area, especially on the penis of the stallion that's going to be being retracted and things like that. Sometimes too, especially on the genitalia, I'll try to do some cold hosing and calming down of the lesion before I start the topical. The other important thing is, obviously, if you can improve the fly management, you'll get less summer sores, which, right, that's like an impossible ask to do, especially in these places in the South. And I mean, I think we've killed 500 million flies this year already, and I don't know if you can tell at my house or not, but that's what it feels like. So But yeah, so systemic ivermectin and then topical treatment. And sometimes these resolve in a matter of weeks. Sometimes you're looking at the long haul for months, but definitely important to get on top of it.
Dr. Miller, on the topic of summer sores, Brenda in Texas wants to know how to protect a summer sore from screw worms, and how can she tell if the wound has already been affected?
Oh, Brenda, screw worms, you went there. Listen, good for you. Good for you. You're paying attention to the internet. Let me tell you a secret that's not so secret about screw worms. All of us veterinarians are worried. They are not fun. The thing that's not fun about screw worms, right, is that's the kind of larva that doesn't, you know, when we think about maggots, as gross as they are, maggots are kind of our friend because they mostly just eat dead tissue. Screw worms are not our friend because they like to eat live tissue, and that can be a difficult thing, and can be very dangerous to any animal. The good news is they don't tend to go too deep. The bad news is they can certainly make skin wounds a whole lot worse, and can make it so that they don't heal. Now, screw worm larvae are quite large, and that's one thing that will kind of tell you that you might be dealing with scleromyiasis. You can actually see the larva with your eyeballs, which is not something that you normally could see with most other things. Now, you can see maggots, they're little guys, but screw worms tend to be a bit bigger. So if you are noticing anything wiggly at all in your horse's skin, have your vet out. Full stop, get there. If you're concerned at all, especially if you do live in Texas, screw worm is still reportable there. So I would absolutely, if you have any concerns about anything wiggling in your horse's skin, have your veterinarian out so that they can take a sample of what's there and take a good look at it. As far as protecting your horse, it's tough because it's really hard to not let any flies land on your horse's skin, right? I mean, that's very difficult. But if you do have an open wound on your horse, any way that you can protect it, for example, back to the socks of silver. That's a really nice way to potentially protect something on the limb of the horse. If it's on the face, that can be pretty hard to do. But if you have any protective coverings that you think that horse could wear, that would be one way to sort of prevent that screw worm from happening, hopefully. Good fly prevention is important, but you know, I'm hoping that we don't see it as much in the horses. And again, if you have any questions or concerns, please have your vet out ASAP so that they can check for you and we can get on top of that as soon as we need to. Do you have anything to add on that, Dr. Turner Garcia? This is brand new, and I don't know if the large animal folks have been talking more about this than I've been talking about it.
I don't know that I have anything more to add. I just think that since we have this threat right now, that maybe some things that we would tend to as an owner, and I won't tell you how many horses I have because I don't want to embarrass myself, but as an owner, some things that we might tend to be like, oh, you know, that's happened before. It'll get better. Like, make sure that we're diligent, right? Because you don't want to be the one that has the first case of this in a horse. So be diligent looking at your animals, and if you see something that doesn't match up, please, by all means, talk to your veterinarian.
Dr. Turner Garcia, Elaine in Connecticut wants to know how you'd recommend treating a horse with long feathers that gets skin lesions or crud buildup under them.
Ooh, so lucky for me, Dr. Miller already kind of touched on this. And this is a loaded question, right? So feathers are beautiful, they're glorious. I have a gypsy foal standing out in my pasture right now, and he's lovely, but I don't know if I'm gonna have regrets later about maintaining these feathers. I guess we'll find out because he's my first one. But they trap the moisture, they trap grass, they trap mud, they trap bugs, they trap bacteria, they trap fungus. So it makes them more prone to dermatitis, lymphedema, hyperkeratosis, mites, cellulitis, all of the things that can happen, all of the derm conditions, I think, the vasculitis down there. So,
You're right. You are correct.
yeah,
I'm
literally
right.
all of them. So, I think the important thing is to not just assume that it's a little bit of crud and to be diligent and make sure that you are looking into, oh, what is the crud actually, and that you treat it appropriately, right? And so, I'm just going to kind of glance over the, you know, clipping of the feathers because that is a big no-no. I know I've worked on a lot of feathered horses before, and the feathers are literally their tiara, the diamond on the ring, the engagement ring. You don't want to clip those. But however, sometimes you do have to do that if it's a very, very severe case because the well-being of the horse has got to become before the cosmetic beauty of the horse. I know it hurts sometimes, but So it's important to diagnose the problem, right? So for example, hyperkeratosis probably isn't as common. There's certain treatments, shampoos with salicylic acid, propylene glycol that you can use for that. But that would be more of a diagnosis that you're going to make with your veterinarian there, and something that you might, once you have it, have trouble treating, and it might come back in the long term. The horses I see with feathers are more having scratches, like we talked about before, cellulitis, because the feathers are really good at hiding little wounds that happen when they get scratched up in the pasture. You don't see it. Maybe the foot doesn't swell up. But then, of course, it's a horse. So it's like, oh, I got a scratch. I must have cellulitis. Let me blow up. It's going to be awful. And so it's important to check the area really thoroughly, make sure you're not dealing with any wounds. And if you are, to treat those wounds accordingly. If they're bad enough, if the cellulitis blows up enough, you might need to do some systemic therapy. Hydrotherapies also are also good for that. They do like to get contact dermatitis down there, can lead to a secondary bacterial infection. If this is something that's repeating, or you have a change, like your horse has feathers, you do a really good job grooming them. And I guess that's probably the first thing I should have led with. Feather maintenance is going to be your number one preventative, right? Grooming those horses, making sure that they're not carrying, making sure that they're not globbed up in mud, making sure that you're brushing them out, right? So it's kind of those one of those things, like if you get hair extensions in, you have to work harder to maintain them. If you get a horse with feathers, you might have to work a little harder to maintain them. But anyways, and then the other thing that Dr. Miller already touched on would be the mites, sarcoptic mange, coreoptic mange. Biosecurity is important here because those are contagious. So if you've got horses with feathers, if you're going to shows, if you're coming on and off properties, your horse might be a little bit more at risk for that. And it can be so uncomfortable and so itchy when you have those mites. And that's when you're looking at doing maybe a little bit more intensive clipping. You want to get rid of them. And like Dr. Miller said, just because they're affecting the legs means doesn't mean they haven't traveled up the body. So if you're going to treat the legs, you know, make sure that you're treating the whole horse, because if you miss part of it and then they just crawl back down and you're back to square one again there. So my main soapbox there is maintain your feathers as best as you can. And Lord have mercy, I know it's hard. But the better you stay on top of it, the more effective it's going to be for that. And then when you do have a problem, make sure that you work with your vet to diagnose it so that you can treat it appropriately.
I agree with everything you said. Another thing I want to throw in there, if you have a horse with feathers, it probably has coreoptes. I hate to tell you, and I love a gypsy. They are gorgeous. They're wonderful horses. I've done a fair bit of work with, you know, gypsies and with the association. Coreoptes, that mite that we talked about briefly, is rampant in the populations. It's a highly contagious mite. If one horse has it, I guarantee they all have it. The difference is one horse might be itchier and the other horse isn't itchy, but that's another sort of maybe genetic predisposition where they can actually get an allergy to the mite bites. And some horses are allergic to the mite bites and some horses aren't. So that's why you're going to have, you know, one gelding that's super affected and then the other geldings in the pasture may be less affected or less itchy. But it is incredibly difficult to get rid of that mite. I'll tell you guys, that is, you want to talk about an uphill battle. That's the definition of it. And honestly, at this point in my career, I just presume that the majority of horses live with it. And we are never curing the Coreoptes mite. We're just keeping the population down to the point where the horse can be comfortable. There's a number of different treatments you can do to keep the Coreoptes mites down, but topical treatments are really the best. Certain sprays, there's actually, you can use some dog, flea, and tick preventative if you want to go off label. I've had some success with that. But a big one, if you do have that susceptible one that has a lot of the skin lesions, keeping those feathers clipped, because the feathers are like, they make this little home for the mites, and the mites can just hang out underneath those feathers and, you know, stick their little tongue out at you and say, you can put topicals on until the cows come home. You're not going to get to me. So that's why we do harp so much on trimming those feathers when you think your horse has mites, because that's really the best way to get the topicals all the way down to the skin. And that's the most effective way to try to reduce that mite population and get your horse feeling a little bit more comfortable. So just be prepared, y'all. If you have a beautiful horse, Carly, this is coming your way too. Coreoptes is super duper common in those kiddos.
Yay.
Sorry, Fred.
Dr. Miller, Melissa in South Carolina wants to know if there have been any research advancements in sweet itch treatments.
Yeah, that is a really good question. And the answer to that is absolutely yes. The downside, my friend, is that nothing is commercially available. So there are some really cool things. They do a lot of sweet itch research, or, you know, Culicoides hypersensitivity research in Sweden and the Netherlands. It's quite prevalent over there. And they have some really lovely researchers who are doing the Lord's work, which is great. And there's some cool things. So they're looking at some, what they call vaccinations, which are just injections you give your horse. They're looking at some new immunotherapy options, which means we try to desensitize the horse to that saliva through sort of traditional injections. And there's some things out there that have proven to be quite effective. The problem with them is they're not commercially available. And probably, I hate to break it to you, won't be commercially available in the United States even longer, because we have, you know, quite a few rules and regulations to get through before we get anything from a research white paper into an actual practical drug that we can put in our horses. So it's out there, and I am fingers crossed hopeful that we can get some good treatments. But while we wait for that, you know, we could talk about Culicoides hypersensitivity till we're blue in the face, and I do love talking about it. There are a couple really big mainstays for treatment. The number one thing you can do for your horse, and I mean this number one, is gnat avoidance. And what does that mean? They like to feed at dusk and dawn. So if you have your horse out in the pasture at dusk and dawn, that is prime time feeding for those mite or those gnats. And so they should be inside during that time. Now in the summertime, guys, it means you're going to flip your pasture time from what you think. So currently, for example, my horses are inside during the day and outside at night. Makes sense for the big flies, you know, the B-52 bombers and things like that. But if you think about that, what time do my horses go outside? They go outside after dinner at 6 p.m. When is dusk? It sure is after 6 p.m. So my horse, being kept inside during the day and outside at night, is actually outside during the prime Culicoides feeding time. So I'm thankful my Heflinger does not have sweet itch. But if she did, I would actually ask that her pasture time be reversed so that she's not outside during that prime time. There are some nice protective fly sheets that you can try to get, but you have to make sure that they protect the areas that your horse has lesions. And the downside is the belly is a really big target for Culicoides. So, you know, you have to get one that's got a belly coverage to it, which can be kind of tricky. Fly sprays are great, but we all know this. They last, I don't know, what do you think, Carly, 35 seconds most of the time on a horse?
That might be generous.
I agree. It's, you know, they last as long as we can smell them and then they're gone. So a lot of people like to say, oh, just fly spray your horse. And I say to those people, I don't think you've ever owned a horse nor used fly spray. But I will say fly sprays that have neem oil in them, N-E-E-M, are a little bit more effective. They have slightly more residual effect against the Culicoides gnat. So I preferentially choose those. And the other thing, there's some really cool permethrin porons that are actually sold for cattle, horses, sheep, you know, and it looks weird because you're at the Tractor Supply getting these, but even the fancy horses can benefit from the Tractor Supply poron sometimes. And I've had some Culicoides horses who have done really well when I've added that into their, you know, sort of treatment protocol as well. So that can be beneficial. The other thing, you know, I want to throw out there is systemic steroids are beneficial. If you've got one of those horses that is just miserable, this is an incredibly itchy condition. And I don't love a steroid forever, but nothing's going to work like a steroid. They really are very effective in treating this. And so when you're at peak season, if you need to give your horse some comfort, if you can safely manage them on steroids, that can potentially be a really beneficial thing for them. So we don't have too much. Currently, I want to kind of remind you guys that allergy testing and immunotherapy for sweet itch, or specifically for Culicoides hypersensitivity, is actually not effective. But many of our horses that have sweet itch also have environmental allergies. They tend to have both because their immune systems are just a bit on the wonky side. And so if you do have a horse that has these signs, I do often recommend allergy testing and immunotherapy, not for the Culicoides part of things, to be honest with you, but instead to treat the environmental allergy part of thing, you know, the grasses, the trees, the weeds that they're also allergic to. And sometimes treating their environmental allergies with allergy injections can actually reduce how severe their culicoides signs are. So NAT management is critical. It is the number one thing we have to manage these horses. But if you also suspect your horse might have some environmental allergies, you could add on some allergy testing in there too. So a very long answer to your not so long question, but I did want to spend a little bit of time on culicoides because, man, I get asked about that a lot.
Dr. Turner Garcia, we have a question from our live audience about treating a pregnant mare who has sarcoids. Would the fetus be in danger at all?
Oh, that is all you. That is all you, girl. I'll let you have that.
Thank you for punting that. I'm actually giving a talk here this fall on safe drugs for pregnant mares, because unfortunately, a lot of the treatments that we have out there, especially for sarcoids, have not been studied to see if they're safe for a fetus. And so my go-to answer on that is, how bad are the sarcoids? And you have to weigh your risks, okay? Because I wouldn't recommend using chemotherapy on a pregnant mare. That would be against my recommendations. However, the comfort of your mare is the number one thing that's going to affect the development and the well-being of your foal. And I think that a lot of times we forget, and we just don't want to give anything to a pregnant mare, right? But if the mare is stressed, if the mare is uncomfortable, if the mare has general inflammation, that negatively affects her pregnancy as well. And so we do have drugs out there that we can use. I would weigh my risks. Did this just come up? You know, most sarcoids, if you can kind of prevent them from getting angry, from getting injured, from rubbing, from the horse biting at them, they kind of slowly develop. I actually have a recipient mare that had a small sarcoid, got an embryo in it. We transferred an embryo and they hadn't changed in about 2 years. Well, of course she got pregnant and they got worse, much worse. And so we kind of managed them very conservatively. We did some, you know, topical steroid treatment to kind of keep them down when they seemed to get inflamed. One of them was kind of pedunculated. And when it got real nasty, we just kind of took it off. We didn't excise the whole thing because we knew we couldn't do chemotherapy at the time. And then after she foaled, we got more aggressive. We did the chemotherapy injections. We did some lasering, some cryotherapy, and we were able to get those kind of into recrudescence. And I don't think we got them, you know, treated all of the way, but she's definitely comfortable now and looks a lot better, and the flies aren't getting after those lesions. So that'd be something that I would recommend working with your veterinarian. And if there's a way to conservatively manage the sarcoids while she's pregnant and then be more aggressive after she foals, that's my recommendation.
Dr. Miller, Cheryl in our live audience asks if red light therapy is appropriate for skin problems and inflammation in the legs.
Yeah, Cheryl, that's a really good question. You know, light therapy is actually pretty cool. There's some neat research out there, and there are different forms of light therapy. So when we talk about sort of the red light therapy that, I don't know if it's all over your feed, but man, it's all over mine. You know, I see that face mask and I'm always tempted to buy it because I want to stay young looking forever. And there definitely are some good information. There is some good research about that in people. We know less in the horses is what I will say. So as far as research goes for skin lesions in horses with red light therapy specifically, the jury's a little bit out. You know, I could see that it might potentially improve healing. So I don't want to poo-poo it and say that it's not going to work. I think that light therapy really does have some interesting benefits. But there's not really a lot of good white papers for me to say, yes, this percentage of horses responds really nicely when we're talking about wounds with light therapy. Now, interestingly, there is a light therapy out there that is a little bit more broad spectrum. Your veterinarian potentially may have this. And that actually has been shown to do quite a bit with wound healing and is one of my favorite things. When I have kind of a chronically non-healing wound in a horse, I will often reach for this particular form of light therapy. But it's not just plain old red light therapy. It uses it at different spectrums. And so it has a little bit more broad reaching effect, but I've seen some really nice turnaround in chronic wounds with that particular product. So, you know, I'm waiting to see some more research on red light specifically for what it's going to do. I don't think you can cause any harm. I will say that. I don't necessarily see that as anything that might be harmful to a horse, especially in their skin. I'm not 100% sure that it's going to be beneficial, but I will also say if you've got one and you love it, I love it too, you know. So I think, you know, practical experience in the world is really important to use just And just because we don't have a white paper on it yet doesn't necessarily mean that it's not out there doing some good.
Dr. Turner Garcia, this is our last question of the night, and it's from Madeline in Florida, who asks what ingredients she should look for or avoid in shampoo for her horse.
Oh, that's a good question. There's so many options out there, and this is where like marketing will get you. The number one thing is look for a shampoo that's appropriate for what you're trying to do. Okay. There's 50 million different medicated shampoos out there. If your horse doesn't need a medicated shampoo, you probably shouldn't be using a medicated shampoo. You know, you don't need to use it and abuse it, and more is not always better. But some of the things you want to avoid, in my opinion, are kind of harsh chemicals. Those would include sulfates and parabens. Those are going to strip the oils, strip the normal flora from the skin. They're going to make your horse more prone to having allergies, dermatitis, dandruff, that sort of thing. You don't want to do excessive conditioners because those will often kind of coat and clump up. It doesn't let the skin breathe. It kind of icks up the hair. You can make them more, again, predisposed to derm conditions if you use the wrong things. I try to avoid fragrances and colorants in mine because I don't really think that they're necessary. You know, if you want your horse to smell nice, go get some of the, you know, citronella essential oil fly spray and spray it on there. They'll smell just as lovely, and they don't need to smell like a bouquet of roses and have all sorts of different fragrances in there to smell like the ocean or whatever it is. And then I look for ones that are nice and pH balanced. You don't want something that's too acidic, too alkaline, you know, just like you would kind of use on yourself. And then again, like I said before, if your horse does have a condition, and like Dr. Miller talked about, there are some horses that you would want to use weekly a medicated shampoo. And there are times for that. So make sure you pick something appropriate for what you're trying to do. If you're just bathing your horse once a week, then, you know, pick something that's good, safe, gentle. And most importantly, like see how your horse tolerates it. I'm not a big fan. I've worked with stallions, and let me tell you, they love to bathe those things every single day. I am not a fan of every single day baths. I think it's a little bit hard, actually, using shampoos and baths every single day on a horse's skin. And I have seen pretty commonly over time, those horses develop worse and worse skin allergies that get harder and harder to treat. And now, does that come with age? Sure. But also, I think that the heavy bathing contributes to that. So as a general rule, if you're looking at a shampoo and it sounds too good to be true, it probably is.
I think that is incredibly solid advice, you know, and be careful if you feel like your horse's skin isn't looking better with whatever shampoo you're using, stop, do not pass go, do not collect $200, pick a different shampoo, change some ingredients, change brands. There are some lovely products out there that really can work very nicely for them. Some good sort of gentle moisturizers. I look for one thing I like in these, especially if you do feel like you want to bathe regularly. We want to have that nice balance of a moisturizing shampoo that isn't overly moisturizing. So there's some really nice veterinary shampoos out there that contain things like ceramides, and that is for what we call skin barrier support. So it's like a gentle moisturizer for the skin. There's fun words like phytosphingosine, fatty acids, ceramides. Usually the shampoos will say made for skin support and whatnot. And those are great products if you're going to be doing some routine bathing on your horse. But I love vet products. You know, we're out here trying to help your horses out as much as possible. So I think there's some really lovely vet products on the market that are available over the counter. You know, you don't have to have prescriptions for them. You don't have to go to your vet for them. But there's a number of really lovely companies that make excellent, safe shampoos for routine use in horses.
Definitely agree. That's my go-to is the veterinary products for shampooing. Definitely.
Well, that's all the time we have for tonight. Thank you, Dr. Miller and Dr. Turner Garcia, for joining me.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you. Yeah, it's been great. It's been great. And you guys keep enjoying your horse skin out there. If you have any questions, call your vet. Always call your vet. We're here for you. And they can always reach out to me as a dermatologist, and I'm happy to help them too. But thank you guys so much for attending.
And thank you to Creative Science for sponsoring this event. Thank you to our audience for listening and sending in all of these questions. If you're listening to us after the live event as a podcast episode, please rate, review, subscribe, and recommend Ask the Horse Live to a friend. Until next time, from everyone at the horse, have a great night.